Blog Talk Radio.
Halloween Jack and the Bone Jangler. It's the eerie late night.
Yes, everybody, welcome to the eerie late night radio show, a very special edition of the eerie late night radio show, a very special tribute show. And we're here tonight to pay tribute to, sorry, I'm already getting choked up here. We're here to pay tribute to Ron Swede, also known as the Ghoul. And well, before we get to that, who are we? I'm Handsome Halloween Jack of the Haunted Theater.
And I am your other host. I'm talking about me. I'm talking about the Bone Jangler. That's right. Happy, super sexy, scary Saturday monster kids. Climb walls, turn blue, scratch glass and every other thing. Let's get ready to cool it with the boom booms over day. No, we're not going to cool it with the boom booms. Tonight's going to be one big, huge boom. Oh, man.
Absolutely. I'm sure that anybody listening knows, and anybody who listens to the show, I'm sure you've seen the news that the Ghoul, Ron Swede, passed away on Monday, so we're going to do a very special tribute show to him, and we have quite an array of guests here. Some of them have been on the show before, and some are new to the show. Bones, you want to do the introductions here? We'll get everybody get in here and going.
We've got a number of people in here tonight, and we are kind of worried about how this was all going to play out, because apparently there's a limit to how many people we can have call in at one time. And I also had somebody pass away in my family this week, so this has been kind of a crazy week for me, and I wasn't mindful of that. Then we also had a lot of people that wanted to participate and call in. So between those two things and something else, which maybe we'll mention later, maybe we won't, I wasn't thinking in my right mind, okay? So anyway, tonight we have, in no particular order, a lot of people who have been associated with the Ghoul over the years, all of whom knew the Ghoul quite well and have lots of insight on what Ron Swede, the man behind the wig and the beard, was like. And I'm talking about Joe Basso Sacco, Joe Cole, David Ivey, who goes way back, and I'm talking about the man who kind of went in reverse order. First he was Froggy, and then he became the son of Froggy. These people are all here with us tonight.
And thank you for being
here. We're here.
We all appreciate it.
Thanks for asking.
We had John on, and what turned out to be a three-part show back when we were talking about the Ghoul, and of course Son of Froggy was on. We had Dave Ivey on a couple of shows, and Joe, we welcome you to the show for the first time. We appreciate you calling in.
No problem. Happy to be here.
I know this is probably really tough for everybody, and Bones is right. I mean, the outpouring has been amazing, and the people who wanted to be on the show, and no offense to anybody else, but I feel we have the cream of the crop here. So, or as maybe Ron would say, the cream of the crap.
He probably would.
The bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, right.
I want to say something here, and there's no disrespect intended. I hope nobody takes us the wrong way. I mean, you know, no day is ever good when anybody passes away, but was it ironic that this took place on April Fool's Day. And when we had posted about it, people at first weren't taking it serious because of what day it was, which I find absolutely bizarre. But
we
called the local news in Detroit, and they said nothing about it on the news until the next day. So they all had their doubt.
I was accused dozens of times by dozens of people of making up Ron, the ghoul's death. I was also accused, this is what I was referring to earlier, I was accused of making up my own family member's death because of them both dying right around or on April Fool's Day. I mean, I don't know who does things like that, but we don't.
Ron was in the hospital for 5 months after suffering a heart attack. So I was kind of expecting this. I just didn't expect it to happen on April 1st. Right.
I think that's when he would be laughing right now, though.
Oh,
as
yeah.
The ghoul.
I agree.
I mean,
that's
how much apropos is that?
That's exactly what I mean, and I didn't want anybody to take that wrong or say
disrespectfully, not at all.
But very apropos for when it happened. Like I said, not that, that
especially
any
if you
time
knew, especially if you knew Ron.
Right.
Well, you all knew Ron quite well. Probably the first one to. I take it you probably all, watched him either as a kid or as a teenager, as a young adult, but probably the first one of you to, meet him and actually get involved with him was probably Dave, right? I mean, if we're looking at the timeline.
I started with him in 1976. That was after Kaiser dumped the Cleveland station, and he came to Detroit to work on Channel 9 and wound up on Channel 62, where I joined him. No, Channel 20. I'm sorry. He did get to 62 a couple of years later, but he first got it on Channel 20.
Wow.
Do I go on? Or,
just so we're not talking over each other, I'm going to give each one of you a chance to say something about this. The only thing that comes to my mind is I remember hearing Ron on one of the Gilardi Party shows on the radio. I had a tape of that, and he was joking around about how this was around the time that Ernie had passed away, and he was joking around about how now Ernie's up there with Dorothy, giving it to Dorothy now, and all I could think to myself is now, oh, poor Dorothy, now they're both there. And then, of course, we're talking about the Lordy's favorite target, Dorothy Fulton. But it's a difficult time, a difficult thing to talk about. But let's take this, John. Your thoughts? Anything you want to say about Ron?
Personally. Yeah, I mean, if anything, another perfect day would have been if he would have passed away on Halloween, because that was like his favorite holiday. So that would have even been something that would have been ironic and all that. But yeah, on April 1st, and I remember on Facebook, there were people attacking Jangler and saying, oh, this is all, it's a bad April Fool's joke. And it's like, no, it's not an April Fool's joke, because when his wife had called Bob the Geek, who was on the crew, and said, send out a crew email, saying the bad news. And unfortunately, I didn't read my emails, so I got the call from our audio guy, Bill Camerata, and he said, did you get the email? And I said, well, what email? And then he said, and I, just like the other two deaths, both Eddies had passed away. One was, Ed Call was my best friend. He was supposed to be my best man at my wedding and all that. So, you know, I told everyone, I go, yeah, the bastard died before he wanted to be the best man. And then all of a sudden this happened. It's like, you got to be kidding me. And you don't believe it. It's surreal. It's like, you know, and I got a studio full of stuff of his that, you know, it's like, all right, well, you know, blow ups, that were leftovers, hats, props that people would send in. As a matter of fact, he had a pith helmet that was on. We took, I think it was Bill who took a picture of one and put it on a postcard where it had this massive smoke bomb just continually shoot up into the studio. And because I wanted to stop it, I got the fire extinguisher and shot him in the face with it. And, you know, the pith helmet is still there with firecrackers on it because that's how he got it. And I actually remember lighting one behind him, you know, during the shoot. And it's, I don't think any other host would let you do stuff like that. And he just, you know, he just lived life on the edge. And you know, there's tons of memories. And I think we were with the crew because I know Dave was there sitting at our table. I don't know if you remember me, Dave, but because I know you came to our office, studios, and Big Mike was there. Well, no, he wasn't there because he was still in Detroit, but Bob the Geek was there, Bill was there, Magic Mark was there. I mean, we were all at the table, and it's like, you know, the only one missing was Ron. And just reminiscing and going over all the things. I think the reason why we hit it off when I first met him was because we were both only children. He didn't have any brothers and sisters. I didn't have any brothers and sisters. Yeah. So we both have that warped sense of humor that you get when you're an only child, because you tend to, what is it? You tend to have a very active imagination. You know, yeah. I mean, you're by yourself. That's why. So, but yeah, it's I just miss him. So I'll stop talking now. So.
Mad Magazine. I grew up on Mad Magazine, so
yep.
I fit in real good with Ron.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let someone else, because I know there's five of us, so I don't want to take up all the time. But yeah, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Please finish.
Oh, no, that's right. I was just saying, just let someone else then come in. And
the new kid on the block. How about Joe? Joe, you want to share anything with us about Ron?
I was, you know, when I was growing up, the Ghoul was, you know, I mean, I live in Cleveland, the capital of horror hosts, pretty much. And,
right.
You know, Big Chuck and Little John was cool. You know, Super Host was for the wimpy kids that couldn't stay up late and on Saturday afternoon to watch a horror host. And then, you know, the cool kids watched the Ghoul because he was badass, you know. And, you know, he was everything I wasn't. And I, you know, not that I wanted to be, but I just thought, man, this guy's cool. And I grew up watching him. And then, you know, every kid at that age, I'm talking early 70s, they wanted to be in the crew because them guys was having the most fun of everybody. And so somehow through a guy that I knew, I got introduced, and I don't know how to explain this, but I'm trying to think of the guy that used to do his boards. I used to do his boards for the show, you know, would they put in between boomies, blowing something up, then they put the board down. Well, I used to do that, and I think the guy's name was Rat that did it before me. Anybody out there know?
Mouse.
Yeah, Mouse, okay. Mouse did him before me, and this guy was like Rat Fink. He did the best pictures. These things were amazing. And I come out with these little cartoon, almost stick figure characters, and, you know, the directors looked at me like, okay, we're going with this now. Okay. But, you know, I mean, but I was just happy to be there because, you know, that was a childhood hero of mine, and he was nothing but nice to me. And I, you know, that was my introduction to being on the crew. I was only on for maybe 6-8 months, but it was priceless to me because I had a ball.
Well, you know, obviously the Ghoul spilled out of Girardi.
And for anybody listening that doesn't know who Girardi is, well, then we're going to have to come to your house and take you out back and rough you up quite a bit. But, Ron found some, he was dumpster diving behind like an old theater or something. He found an ape costume, put it on. He's like, that was pretty cool. It obviously belonged to somebody. I don't know that it was in the dumpster. It's probably in somebody's car. Who knows? And he, you know, took it home, and next thing you know, Ernie Gagliardi is doing an appearance somewhere, and he shows up in that gorilla outfit, and Ernie calls him up on stage. Long story short, he ends up being affiliated with Gagliardi's show. Gagliardi comes home one weekend after he's been out to Hollywood making the big bucks, and Ron didn't even want... This is the thing. Ron didn't really want necessarily to be on the air. He wanted to get Ernie on again somehow, like have him fly out and shoot four shows in a weekend and, you know, do stuff like that. But Ernie was done with it. There was no, he'd already done that. There was no need for it. And that is how the ghoul happened. It wasn't because he wanted to do it. And to all the kids back then, I don't know if you were one of them, John, I suspect you were, right? I mean,
he was
like the anti-hero, you know. Here was like the Girardi thing again, but now it was like this proto-punk irreverent thing blown up to the nth degree, and now we're really blowing stuff up all the time and just manic energy and crazy. And it's like you weren't supposed to watch him. You know, you could watch Big Chuck and Little John, you know, because they were safe. You could watch Supes, you know, because he's safe. But the ghoul, he was like, I don't know, maybe you're not supposed to watch. You might have to sneak and go watch him somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, remember the teachers used to complain about him.
Yeah.
The
big difference between Ron and you said yourself, Joe, that when you used to watch him on Channel 61 in the old days, is the difference between him and Big Chuck and Houlihan. I don't know how many people remember Houlihan originally. They would always do a certain ethnic person. They would never say, you know, what Ron would say, like Polacks. And I mean, it wasn't just Polacks. I mean, he attacked Parma, and that was from Ernie. AMRAP and all that, but you know, they never went after any person. Ron would go after first it was Dorothy Fulltime, then it was George Forbes, then there was Gary D. These were older guys then, and then new in the 1990s, then all of a sudden he's going after Denise DeFalla, Wilma Smith, and it's like, oh my god. And with Denise, she was a local news person. She came out with a CD. And I know Mike remembers this. And the CD was songs that the donations went to kids or whatever through St. Malachi. Up on that, and we were starting to just destroy it. We did skits where we had the crew pretend to do skeet shooting, and I would edit in, you know, the clay pigeons getting destroyed, and it would be like her CD. And then I think the part that really did it was, we had a contest one night, and I told Ron, everybody thought we were shooting it live, you know, and I said, well, listen, to keep that going, why don't we do in the beginning, I got call forwarding at the office. I said, so why don't we have a contest, and he went with this, to choose who was the better singer, Yoko Ono or Denise DeFalla. So Denise, you know, they played the song, and she had this wonderful music, right? And then all of a sudden he said, okay, what about this with Yoko? And Bill, audio guy, he had the perfect one. All of a sudden you hear, and it was Yoko. And, you know, the crew's like, oh, my God. So we did it that night. The calls came in. You know, they were forwarded to my house, so I must have gotten about 80 calls that night. Luckily, I'd call waiting, so, you know, I'd just jump them. But 10 minutes later, finally, and everyone knew that Yoko was worse. So, you know, the it came in like maybe 80% said Yoko was worse, and 20, you know, obviously his fans were saying Denise was worse. Well, I gave him the paperwork, and he said, no, we can't do that. So the next day, I had two flow charts saying, all right, 80% said Denise was worse, and 20% said that Yoko was better. Well, you know, and that was just part of the joke. Well, then we meet Denise Safala at a Rock Hall event, and she comes. I went up to her with Ed, and we say, you know, Ms. Safala, if you don't mind, can you do a skit where you come over and, you know, to the studio without even Ron knowing? So she did, and she walks in. He had no clue. She walks in and is threatening him, going, Gulski, what the heck is wrong with you? You know, you're making fun of my CD and blah, 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 blah. And he was shitting his pants. He was on his toilet, yeah. And it's like you could have used it because, and, the, you know, I mean, whoever, I mean, I think Mike was there, so he can, go for it. But it, right when she goes and punches him, gives him an uppercut, I yell out, cut. And then all of a sudden she looks, oh, okay, that was good. And Ron just like totally like, what, who, where, what? He didn't realize, and he thought he really pissed her off. And we had a mannequin, so we just switched him with the mannequin, and that's it. She went nuts and threw it all over the place, and, you know, and that was just, you know, that's. And then this is the sad thing about it. Some of his fans actually called her and made threats at Channel 19 and 43 said they were waiting out. They waited out in the parking lot. So at another event, then she goes, Ron, you got to say something. So he then said, oh, we're just friends. It's all a joke. And it stopped. And it's like, wow, what kind of psychotic? Well, never mind, because we're all psychotic. But, I mean, that's his friend. That's what his fans were. So, but that's just one.
Well,
I mean,
remember,
I could write a book on it. So,
I remember watching some of those shows because I used to get them on tape. Didn't he call her Dufala? Or is that how he used to refer to her sometimes?
It was Dufala.
Or?
But they, yeah, Dufala. It was Dufala, but she would change, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Let me ask you guys, when he showed up in the gorilla suit, now I've heard things about this, what exactly was it about it that impressed Ernie enough to add him to the show? I mean, I heard that it was because it was like 100 degrees outside, and he said anyone that came in that gorilla suit must be nuts or something like that. I mean, did anybody ever hear?
That was it. Yeah, that was it.
Any stories?
I think Dave could vouch for it, too, because he told us about it. And he said, Ernie, and he showed up twice, and Ernie said, you know, if a guy can be in a suit and sweat that much, I got to have him up here. And that's that's what it was, yeah.
Wow.
Jeez.
That's
just
amazing.
He became his right-hand man after that, then.
All right, so we had a Froggy, a live-action Froggy. Unfortunately, he too passed away, about seven years ago?
And yeah, he had to be at least seven. Yeah, it had to be at least seven.
So, to make a long story short, Eddie was no longer Froggy, and that left an opening for there to be a new Froggy. What can you tell us about that?
Actually, he's on the phone right now.
Back. Yeah, no, that's what originally happened was he hurt his back. So I was just filling in until he could get back to doing it. And then it just never worked out that way.
And yeah, once he had passed away then, and that was Eddie Willie from Beware Video. He was famous because of all the old, you know, that's where we got most of our tape stock. But I'll never forget when you know, and Mike, who's from Detroit, here's the difference. Eddie is like 5'9" and probably as thin as a rail. Yeah. And Mike is like 7 foot, you know, 300 some pounds. So, yeah. So imagine, you know, here's a smaller Froggy. And then I'll never forget when Ron saw him. It's like, you know, what do we do? And I said, Ron, why don't you tell everyone we gave him some Froggy squeezins and it had steroids in it. And that's what happened. So he ran with it. But I'll be honest with you, Mike looked like a freak. I mean, it was unbelievable. It's just, Jesus, what the hell?
Now, Mike, what do you remember about when you first came? I mean, were you were obviously you weren't just thrown in to, like, become the new Froggy, you had been around. So what can you tell us about how you became involved in the first place?
It was just going to see every time they were coming to Michigan, I would go to see the shows. And then started driving to Ohio and seeing them at Goulardi's and stuff, and then got to know all the guys in the crew, and they finally said, hey, you know, why don't you ask him to be part of the crew since you're here all the time? And they needed somebody in Michigan to set things up and make sure things were ready for when he got there. And so I asked him, and he said yes.
That's awesome.
But,
wow.
The thing I really remember is the first time I was on the set was, it was funny. I went to actually was coming up for, that one convention. I can't remember the name of it. The one where the guys went to jail that were doing it, but,
Fright Vision.
There you go. So we was up for that, and we went to visit Eddie, and while we were there, the phone rang, and it was, the guy that does the website. Oh, we can't, So he didn't want to be the Toxic Avenger at the Rock Hall. So, Ed looked at me and he said, hey, do you want to do it? And I said, well, yeah. So then, Bob invited me to the set cause he was so happy he didn't have to do it. And that was a ball. But then the first time I was on the set as a crew, I remember Ron took me into his office and he said, here, come sit with me. And then I got to sit with him while he put his beard and his mustache on. I mean, it was just like sitting watching Santa getting ready to go deliver the toys. It was just amazing.
Right.
I mean, I felt like I was 5 years old. It was just amazing.
Well, listen, we have about 3 minutes left in the live show, and there's something here that I want to play because I love this theme song, and this is going to take us into the after party. So everybody, please hang out. We're going to continue this conversation. Remember this?
I love this track.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Came on, and everything changed. The things that he does, you'd think he was insane. Showing all these movies that they had talked, he still put them on, even knew he knew they sucked.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great song.
You guys know my son, thank you.
And Destination, yeah.
Destination.
Yep.
Yeah, Mikey.
And if this song
Mikey
doesn't...
and Tim.
Just, if this song doesn't give you an idea of the frenetic energy of the show and the craziness of the show, I don't know what would, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez.
Now, Mikey used to call me up quite often back then when this era of the show was on.
Oh, yeah, they used to come over to the studio a lot, all three of them.
Yeah, Mikey was great when he dressed up like the Pink Flamingo.
Yeah.
That is great stuff.
And him and Froggy would fight. Those are some of the great shows, going to Detroit, the live shows, and seeing... the Pink Flamingo and Froggy fight.
Oh, that's right. He would dress as the Pink Flamingo. They fight it out. God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, the Magic Bag Theater. That was a blast.
Well, we got
sorry
about
Bob Paulin. I couldn't remember your name. Sorry, I blanked out.
We got about a minute
Bob
left
Paulin.
In the live portion of the show, and I just want to say thank you to everybody in the chat room. We got Dr. Valentine in the chat room, good friend of Froggy's. We got Carlos Borloff is in there, and Mortimer Van Creep, and France's favorite horror host, France, Vincent Grimley. Every time he's on the Monster Channel, France is like the number one country that's watching. He's the Jerry Lewis of horror hosts. So, and everybody is saying hi in chat, and I want to thank everybody for listening live. Please listen to the archive of this show. Like we said, we got another 15 minutes to go. We're going to let everybody, continue with the memories of Ron. And we'll see you all live next week right here on the Erie Late Night Radio Show. Thanks for listening live, people in chat. Please listen to the archive. You're going to want to. We're going to be talking more about Ron. So everybody have a good night. and thank you for listening.
Night, everybody.
And we're in the after party.
Night.
We're in the after party. There we go. Now this is where we dish the dirt. No, I'm
all
kidding.
Right, no.
I think something that we should talk about, and I want to say, well, first, the Pink Flamingo thing was mentioned because I brought up Mikey, and Mikey was the drummer for Destination. I love that track,
yep.
Especially when it goes into that Rush working man thing where it slows down and they're saying, Papa, ooh, mau, mau. Papa. I love that part. And speaking of Pink Flamingos, I posted some pictures earlier today of Cinema Wasteland, where Ron gave Nocturna, Enchantress Nocturna, a Pink Flamingo that he signed to her, and that's a cherished memento from when we met Ron. And she's got that right here. We're looking at it right now. And what I was saying earlier to Nocturna is with the Ghoul, it was kind of like the early days of Kiss when they, you know, fiercely guarded what they looked like.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, excuse me, partying over here in honor of the Ghoul. the Ghoul, a lot of people, and I think I'm one of them, you know, and I'm supposed to be as omniscient as I choose to be. Well, I must choose not to know if Ron Swede is 5 feet away from me out of the Ghoul garb. I mean, so you guys got to see, and he got that advice from Muhammad Ali to not let them know what he looks like, the public at large.
Right.
Which is really cool that he did that and he protected that. So on those lines, you guys, all of you, Dave, John, Mike, Joe, all of you got to see a side of Ron, or many sides of Ron, that none of us got to ever see. So I would like for all of you to tell us something about that Ron, the guy that, he's the guy that's the Ghoul on TV, but like something that the public wouldn't really know about him.
Okay, I'm going to start out on Dave Ivey, Michigan here. Ron did an appearance up here at a place called the Gene Scene, and they had him set up at the back wall of the store. They had a door into the stock room, and they put a couple of folding tables up in front of him so he could sit there and sign autographs. They had the fans lined up along the right-hand wall. They're supposed to go past Ron, get their autograph, and then go up the other wall and exit the store. Instead, they all started packing in like sardines. They started pushing against the tables. Ron had to slide out of the door before the tables got pushed up, and they locked the door, and he took his beard, sunglasses, wig, and smock off, stuffed them in his little gym bag, and then went out the back door, went around the side of the store. Everybody's out there pushing, trying to get into the store, screaming, "We want the Ghoul, we want the Ghoul." Ron goes over and he's pounding on their back, saying, "We want the Ghoul, send him out here." And he backs up, hops in his car, and goes. They didn't have any choice. They were going to take the. They did a lot of damage, I guess, but he wasn't responsible for it. But he had to win. That's the fan base in Michigan. They were insane. They loved him up here.
He was always bigger in Michigan than Cleveland because.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, in Cleveland, he followed Ernie, you know. And there's a great story that he once said about going to Michigan. This was in the late 90s, and he went there when he went there to do autographs for when the Ghoul scrapbook came out, or crapbook, depending on how you read it. And it was some massive mall that had two floors, and the line literally was all the way down to one side and around to the other on the upstairs. And this would have been in 2000, and he's telling us about it because he came back and all of a sudden he's saying, "Oh, you know, I'm sitting there and there's this guy that was hanging around on the one side, and he's called himself, I don't know, it was Crazy Dave or Crazy something. He's going, hey, Ghoul, you know, they called me crazy. And it's like, okay. And all of a sudden, and he's telling us, he said, he drops a stick of dynamite on the table right next to where he's signing the autographs. And Ron looks at him and says, is that real? He goes, yeah, that's why they call me crazy. And Ron right away just threw a bag over it because there's a security guard like less than 5 feet away. And he's like, what do you want me to do with this? He goes, boy, you blow up cars all the time, why don't you? And he's like, you've got to be kidding. So, but Ron then was in Detroit, right? He comes all the way back to Cleveland with it in his bag in the car. And then he comes to me and he's telling me the story. And then he drops it in front of me. And I look at it, I'm like, get that out of my office right now. And, you know, and then get this. Then we were seriously thinking, they're going, well, you know, wait a minute. We on the property where the studio was, there was also like a junk dealer. So I thought, well, you know, he's got a bunch of cars. And instead of using a little model that we do all the time, why don't we film it to make it look like one? And then right before I thought, I go, what am I thinking of? Now, luckily then, I went into the hospital because I had an aneurysm and a stroke. I'll never forget the first day I come out of the hospital. Right away I asked, whatever happened with that stick of dynamite? So, but he was crazy. I mean, you know, it was, they got rid of it. I mean, they call it, we were friends with 6th District Police out of Cleveland. You know, they came there to watch the show all the time, and they took it and they, you know, put it in a bucket of water and got rid of it. But it's like, you've got to be kidding. These are his fans, you know, and it's, but yeah, he never wanted his face to be seen. And as a matter of fact, Eddie, who played Froggy, he also did that because we were at Parmenton once with Channel 55 doing a big thing, and everybody was there. And, you know, here was Froggy and Eddie saying that these little teenage punks were sitting there and like poking them and all that. And all of a sudden he turns around, talks to him, he says, I'm going to go change. You don't know what I look like, but I know what you look like. And they stopped right away. And, you know, and it's like, that was one of the, yeah, that's one of the things when people don't know what you look like. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about you, Joe?
I have a story about Ron that I don't think anybody, not many people know the history about it, but we did a convention in Baltimore. It's called Horrifying. And
yeah.
The main guest was Bruce Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the time, Bruce had a book out called If Chins Could Kill. And, you know, unbeknownst to anybody else, Ron was a hero of his early, you know, he's the early influence of Bruce Campbell's because he grew up in Detroit and he loved the Ghoul. And I guess he said that he used to go to the studio every once in a while, whatever. But so we decided that we were going to surprise Bruce Campbell when he was giving, you know, his speech to everybody. It was, put it this way, the venue was so small that we ended up having to put put him outside in a parking lot, and so people could come and stand and see the whole thing. So anyways, Bruce is up there talking, and, you know, me and a couple other guys and crew, Eddie was there, Ed Willie, with his camera. And then all of a sudden, Ron comes out in the garb and says, hey, Bruce, when are you going to put the Ghoul in the movie? And Bruce just looks at him and goes, oh, my God, it's Ron. He looks at the crowd, pulls Ron up on the stage, the makeshift stage we made, and, you know, he says, do you guys know who this is? He goes, this is the Ghoul. He used to have these crappy movies and used to blow shit up. He said, oh, my God, let's all give homage to the Ghoul. And Bruce Campbell starts doing the old hands-down homage to the Ghoul. And it was amazing. It was this nobody, unless you were there, it was like, oh, my God, you know, here's a guy that's, you know, has a pretty good career going, you know. And his influence was the Ghoul, Ron Swede. And that was amazing. And the footage is out there. I have the footage of that. It's amazing.
Matter of fact,
Eddie.
Yeah, I was. I was at that convention. I was there, and I remember all that because that was the second time
the
I saw him.
I was
the very first
that
time that I met Bruce Campbell in Chicago many years ago. I think it was 2001, so like the first year of being on TV for me. That was one of the first things out of his mouth. I mean, he and I hit it off really well right away, and one of the first things out of his mouth was how he loved the Ghoul, and that as a kid, mm-hmm. he and his friends would go to tapings of the Ghoul.
That's true.
Wow.
Bruce was so amazed that he was standing there in front of me. He's like totally, you know, just couldn't imagine that we did that. And it was, and Ed Willey, I mean, I have to say, if I have my part, Ed Willey to me was the guy that, I mean, everybody on the crew when I was there, Bill and Jeff, Magic Mark, Bob the Geek, you know, everybody that was there was great guys. But Ed was just, he was just special. Eddie was special. And,
yeah, he was.
He was filming this, and Bruce, he was talking about movies and stuff, and he's going, you know, you guys in the video, you see that when we have a glitch or a blooper, and then, you know, he goes, you know, movies aren't real. And Eddie, and his Eddie's voice goes, oh, no, really? And I laughed. You see the footage, it's in the footage, but... Yeah, Eddie was great. Me and Eddie at the One Fright Vision convention, they had the Alice Cooper band playing, and me and Eddie was standing against the wall right by the drummer, and they went into Billion Dollar Babies, and that dude hit that riff, and we were just looking at each other going, God, it can't get any better than this. This is amazing. And that's what I remember about Eddie. He was such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And Ron was a nice guy. Believe me, he treated my son and Ron were so close. Yeah, Bones knows. He's seen the pictures of when I had my business and I had a pumpkin patch and I, you know, had him come out and he did an appearance and my son and him. He loved my son. My son did the Ghoul show song and he also did the Destination song on the show, which. You know, he sang it too. So, you know, I've been around a while with him.
Well, I have to say with Ron, and I talked about this when we had John on for that three-part show, which I have to tell you, John, everybody loved those shows. I mean, yeah,
I was thrilled. That's what I mean.
They were
I
such
told
great
everybody
shows.
Else. Oh, yeah.
Well, my son's autistic, and at the time he was five, I was getting tapes of the Ghoul show. I don't even remember who it was that was doing it. They were taping a period of time and sending it to me. And, you know, my son being autistic, really, he didn't react to much music-wise, TV-wise, or anything like that. And I was watching one of the shows, and they had a close-up of the Ghoul, and my son just walked up and planted a kiss on the TV. On the close-up of him, and I took a picture of it, and it went viral. And you know, people from the show had gotten in touch with me and everything, but I had been planning to go to Cinema Wasteland, the Horror Find, and Ron himself had gotten in touch with me and asked me to have my son autograph that picture to him. And I brought the picture to the convention, gave it to Ron. He hung it up on the wall behind his table, and then gave me a bunch of stuff, even taped the message to him, and just, that's something I will never forget of him. Never forget of him. That was just unbelievable to me. That was, you know, how kind he was to him, and he was just an amazing person. And, John, we're going to get you on for another triple header one day.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you know what? I too bad we didn't get it into this time, but I know this would embarrass Mike, but there was a famous incident where he was a bit gassy.
Okay. And, yeah, some bad hospital chili.
Yeah,
oh,
and
God.
Let me just leave it at where he walked around.
I was going to say, we're going to get cut off real quick here because,
okay.
as you know from
okay.
doing the show before, she just comes on, the British lady, and says goodbye. So we probably got about 30 seconds. We got to definitely do this again. I mean, whenever
sure.
everybody's free, I want to thank all of you